Welcome to O2 Coaching's Empower Your Team podcast series with your host, Chloe Caron, founder and president of O2 Coaching. As an executive coach, author, businesswoman, thought leader, and speaker with more than 20 years of experience, Chloe's USC, her unique strategic contribution, is to create a new generation of inspiring and inspired leaders by positively impacting the lives of 1 million leaders through her webinars, conferences, books, and podcasts. In this podcast series, Chloe and her guests will take you on a journey, sharing their leadership stories, struggles, successes, and learnings. The conversations will highlight practical advice and insights for leaders. Be sure to share your thoughts on this podcast series on our LinkedIn or Facebook pages. Enjoy this podcast.
Welcome to today's podcast on creating the conditions for empowering your team with Manon Brouillet. If you've missed last week's podcast, I invite you strongly to go and listen to it because we got to speak with Paul Lirette, the GM for GSK in Japan. And with him, we spoke, I would say, about all the topics that I address in my book, Empower Your Team. Really, the five elements that create an empowered team and tools that will help you as a leader creating the empowered team that you want to create. First one, we talked about how can I connect with myself? Really, growth of my team starts with me as a leader growing and understanding the impact that I have as a leader and making different choices. Being very clear also, on my USC, what's my unique strategic contribution? Because that will be the anchoring with which I will lead, the level to which I will play, how high and how low I will go in terms of being strategic in the operations. What leeway do I give to my team? How do I delegate? Everything will be anchored in the USC. So being very clear on your USC is critical. We then talked about creating the conditions for creating an empowered team, like being vulnerable, like being open and transparent and somewhat vulnerable around what do you as a leader are working on? What do you as a leader want to create in terms of climate within your team, the trust between all members? That's our specific topic for today with Manon. And so we'll deep dive on that topic today. And then we talked about the coaching approach. As a leader, the importance of being a good coach is critical. And Paul shared a few of his tips on that. In the book, you'll find everything as to the coaching model, the mindset in which you need to be a present and to be a good coach, the listening skills, the questioning skills, the feedback. All of that we explore because we do believe that although coaching is not the only leadership style, obviously, it's definitely a style that as leaders, we need to be focused in developing because it's not such an easy style to adopt. We need to gain that expertise. We need to gain that knowledge and the art of coaching. And then we talked with Paul, how do you stay engaged with your people? I talk about it in terms of contract, in terms of being clear as to what is expected between us team members. What is expected in terms of the behaviors, the norms, and being very clear to that so that we can hold ourselves accountable to that. We can all play a role in leading that team. Not only the leader can lead the team, the whole team can be part of it, can be very proactive. Whether through roles in meetings, whether through a clear destination and knowing how everybody contributes to that destination. In short, leadership is something that can be shared and can be held across the team. And then obviously, once you've done all that, you've created a culture where accountability, agility, engagement, innovation is at the forefront of what you have created within your team. And that's what we talked about with Paul. So if you haven't had the chance to really listen, go ahead, have your pen if that's a possibility for you and take notes, however you want to take notes, but do take notes because there's a ton of great conversation piece tips and insights that you will get into the first one in this podcast. Now, that being said, in this podcast with Manon Bruyet, we do talk about how do we create that one team spirit? Because that's at the basis of creating a culture, creating conditions for this this team, your team, to really be successful. And we talk about leaving your individual hat out of the door and really putting on your enterprise hat, putting your president's hat, your CEO's hat, your chief hat, whatever the hat, the highest hat you need to put on, put it so that you can have a 360 view on the team, and you can be empathic to the others. You can understand what they're living, what they're going through, and you can help them. You can allow them to help you because you know that alone you don't have all the answers. We talked about all of that with Manon. So I invite you to have fun, sit down, relax, take some notes if you want to take some notes. And as always, please share your comments on the podcast. So welcome to this week's podcast. I am so excited to welcome Manon Bruyet to our mic, because Manon and I met actually more than a year ago, but a year ago, you and I, Manon, sat down on a terrace, if you remember.
I totally remember.
We talked about leadership and we were so passionate, and I feel like we're going to do the same today. So welcome to the podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So a quick bio for people who would not know you. I don't know anyone who wouldn't know you, but let's say there's a few there out there in the marketplace that do not know you. You are the former CEO of Videotron, a Quebecor company. You transformed this company. That's actually your trademark. You are really good at transforming organization. You're very strategic. You're currently on the board and the audit committee of the Cirque du Soleil. So that's a handful of transformation. What else would you add?
I'm on the board of Banque Nationale as well. I'm on the board of a big telecom company in the States called Altice USA. I just joined the board of a small companies based in San Francisco called Sonder.com. It's a next generation hospitality business. So it's a lot of fun. I do a lot of consulting. I work with TPG, of course. They were part of Cirque du Soleil up to today. And I had a great journey with them. So I do some mandates with them. I work also with Inopia, another VC based in Montreal that has offices around the world. So quite exciting lifestyle, I would say. I feel I contribute a lot, but on a different role now.
And very strategic and very international. And when you and I sat down, because you're one of the contributors to my book, Empower Your Team, you were very generous in sharing your views. And what's really stuck with me, and that's our topic from today, is how you were able to create winning conditions in the midst of all those transformations. So that's our topic today. Anywhere you would like to start in terms of winning conditions before I ask you a couple of questions?
There's one thing that just strikes me right from the start is I realize, because I mean, I've not been CEO all my career. I ramp up the ladder. And when I got to the CEO office, I realized that when we say rhythm at the top, tone at the top, it meant so much to me, because I realized that you could transform a culture and you could do things differently. And there's not only one recipe to success. So it became a true passion. It always has been. But I realized that the more I was ramping up the ladder, you know, at executive position and then up to CEO, my job was transforming itself, coming from a more specialist in some areas to a HR person, if I may say, because the more you're higher in the hierarchy, the more your time is spent to deal with people and to so I call it HR. Maybe it's not the right word, but that's what I feel at the end. Maybe 90% of my job was managing people and making sure that they were not losing sight of the big stories, the big picture.
You said the word creating that culture. I remember an example you gave to me in terms of throwing a pebble in the water and seeing your circle getting bigger and bigger as you were climbing that ladder.
Yes, and this is not something I realized. I learned that from a coaching earlier in my career, actually, when I was VP product development and marketing in the early years in Videotron. I was quite, direct and very focused on getting things achieved. And so on a more people perspective level, I had some learning to do, and I took coachings because I had a 360 evaluation that struck me, and I came home and I said, I'm so bad. So I wanted to change and to learn that aspect of the job because I was very technical. You see, you know, I'm especially, we do this point A to point B. It's a straight line. It's efficient. Why should we go around like that? And then I realized later in my career that, oh my God, sometimes I have to stop, look in the back. Okay, everybody's following me? Okay. So maybe it's not a straight line. We're going to turn right and then we're going to come back. So this is soft skills that I had to learn. And, you know, that rug that you throw in the water, one of my early coach, he told me that, listen, Mano, you're a VP. And I was not even senior VP at that time. So I was VP. And he says, "You the rock you handle is bigger than a director and it's bigger than a manager. So when you throw it in the water, it makes larger circles. So everybody is more looking at it. So you have more impact. You want it or not, you have more impact. So be careful with that." So it totally transformed my mindset about managing people. And then, of course, I learned with that person. He was a great mentor. And here I am today talking to you.
And I so appreciate you sharing that and being vulnerable in a way and sharing your struggles, because that's true of most leaders. They become experts. That's what is recognized. And then they have to do that shift of this leader and being aware of that shadow that they cast. And in your case, it was a 360. It was a mentor that really supported you there. In some other instances, it's a bit more difficult.
But I think as well, I wanted to learn. Because you said a word very important. I was vulnerable. I always allowed myself to be vulnerable. Even today, when I don't understand something, I don't say, okay, I have to show that I knew it because, I mean, they're hiring me for that. No, I'm going to say, listen, there's something I don't get here. So help me get through that. So I was like that all my career. And I think that's why I've been able to learn to scale up myself, because you scale a company, but as a leader, you have to scale yourself as well. Mm-hmm. So I've been able to scale myself along the scaling of Videotron, because that was the longest journey, you know, I've done, and the more I would say most striking along my career. But I think I was willing, you know, to learn. And it's not, unfortunately, sometimes you cross people and you say, oh my God, this person could become amazing as a leader, but they get stuck to a certain point where they don't open, and they think that at that certain level, they're good, and there's nothing more they can learn. So
they're stuck in their ego.
Maybe, yeah, probably. I guess.
I remember the conversation we had on that beautiful terrace. You said, "I want my team to be as if they were CEOs of the company."
Totally. Yes.
And so, In getting to that topic of creating one team and everybody on that team being the CEO, if you will, of that company, how do you create that? How do you nourish that?
My personal recipe, and this has been learned from my own instinct. It's not something that I've been coached or I found in a book. But instinctively, when I got into the executive room, and I was doing that with my own team prior becoming CEO, it's okay, once we get to the executive table, we just all remove our hat. I'm no longer the CEO, I'm no longer the CTO, I'm no longer the CHRO. We are all executive at the same level, and we will put some issues on the table, some challenges, some project that I want everybody to be interested in, to have a point of view, and to ask questions. You don't have to, because some leader, what they do is, if it's an IT topic, it's only the CTO who can speak. So it takes time for the team. They cannot become good at it the day one. And you have to have the people that are willing to play that way. But I would tell you, most of people like to do that because we're all intelligent people. So of course I can have a point of view on HR, even though I'm the CTO. Of course I can have a point of view on sales, even though I'm in charge of technology or whatever else. I would always tell them, you know, at the end of the day, I'm the CEO. So I'm going to, you know, sometimes if we have to, we don't come to a common ground of decision making, we'll decide. So this is one of the key elements. The second thing is to be able to be vulnerable. You know, you just touched that before, to be able to be willing to learn and not be scared of being judged or if you ask a stupid question, you know, your boss or someone else will judge you. And this is more in the action. So you have to show it as the leader. You put yourself in a position where you do it yourself. This I don't understand. Can you explain it to me? Sorry, maybe it's going to be a dumb comment. And then you build the trust and you build that secure zone where everyone can collaborate, contribute. So it makes amazing. It's my recipe and it makes amazing results to me from what I've noticed. People get more engaged. They're not scared of underperforming. There's a lot of respect. Sometimes there's not. But then when you work that way, respect comes around the corner. So it's, and of course, I think the ultimate thing is to have fun. I always say to my team, we're not in the middle of an emergency room saving someone that is about to die. We're selling internet when I was at Videotron. We're you know, renting houses in some company I work with, if there's that's their business model. And then you're capable of stepping back and taking a breather and all a mix of that.
So in order for you to do that as a CEO or as a leader of a team, you need to be secure in your own leadership, because it means that, of course, you still have the right to decide at the end, but you're really open and you're actually seeking the opinions and the contribution of everybody around the table. You said, I need to scale myself as a leader. What allowed you to be confident, to scale yourself and to say, you know what? I don't have to be afraid of anything that goes around the table. We're all equal.
I think it was natural for me not to be insecure. People always tell me I'm authentic. And I think it's one of my key assets, because authenticity goes along vulnerability at some point. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I got an email yesterday from the CEO of TPG. I mean, it's an amazing private equity, a huge, and he was telling me that, you know, in a long email, that's something that really, he really enjoyed during that mandate. That was, I was driven most of the time by pure common sense, which is sometimes underrated in business, because you feel that you have to come with big concept. And no, me, it's like down to earth. Okay, what's the problem? And I think, you know, it can also bring me to that USC you're referring to. Mm-hmm. I think that my superpower is that capacity to grasp very complex environment and concept and to simplify it to its root and to make it simple for people to understand and to say, okay, so now we can address that. So what do we do about it? To do that, you have to be vulnerable. You have to be authentic, because you're telling people, okay, we're talking about big you know, concept, but at the end of the day, it's so simple. It's this and that. And people are like, yeah, you're right. So, okay. So I think it enabled me to build my confidence, my self-confidence. And we all have struggle in career. And at a certain point, I had a leader that was very difficult to deal with. And this is where I think it concluded my self-scaling, meaning that I had a real reflection about, okay, what do I do about that? Do I have a problem or do this person has a problem? And I came to the conclusion that he has the problem. So I said, what can happen? Worst case, he's going to take a fit and he's going to fire me. So I'm going to wait for that day to happen. I'm going to focus on my job. And so it fed me and totally it removed boundaries of fear, you know, and it was another key milestone in my career where I learned to, and I always say that now I have a skin of steel. Mm. I don't take things personal at work. I'm capable to step back. When it becomes too boiling, I will step back naturally. I have a second sense that enable me to, okay, it's not the time to take a decision. Let's take a breather here. So all of that combined.
It's interesting because I was doing another podcast with someone else on women's leadership, and she mentioned exactly that women tend to take things personal in the potentially in their personal life and at work. But is this, do you find, something that really would help women leaders? It's not our topic today, but if women leaders are listening, do you feel like this is something that we need to become better at as women, not to take things personally?
It's funny, huh? I don't totally agree with that. I think that a lot of men take things personal. It's just the way they express it is different.
Gotcha.
So I met so many men that were, you know, building stories in their head, you know, bringing that home. And you're like, my God, you know, step back, take a breath. Nothing happened like you are seeing it. So to me, it's not a comment from woman versus man. I think it's more, we're very, how can I say? I don't want to say perfectionist, but there's a different way of operating from woman and men. And we're generalizing here because of it, people are different. But I think that there's some aspect of my leadership that may be different than most of women because I've learned that because of the context where I was evaluating. I worked in a men's world for as young as I remember. So I had to maybe take some of the rules of play from more men's environment. I don't know. I cannot tell you for sure, but that's my journey.
You've mentioned vision and bringing your team along on that vision. For me, that's one key that really brings team together. It's a winning condition. How do you make sure that your vision is clear for you first, I imagine, and then your team, and along the way that it stays clear?
I think that working a vision alone in your office is a big mistake. Of course, you have to have an ambition as a leader, but first, in order for people to follow you, you have to work that vision with a core team, or even it has to be a path that is not only to create the vision, but to engage people along the way. So building that vision with a broader audience is very winning condition from my experience. And I think that once you have a vision, you need to write a blueprint of that and make a story out of it. I realized that communication was so powerful, and I think that's why I had so much success, because I have an easy to communicate and to, as I mentioned, take large, big, complex concept, make it simple, so then I can translate it to people. And so I think that the blueprint that has to be digestible for all type of personality, because you will have all types of personality in a business, scientific, more people, more creative. So you have to make sure that that same message can be adapted depending on the audience you're talking to, but always keeping the same target, the same goal, the same destination. To me, it's really a process and a work that has to be organized. Mm. So you gather the data, you don't go just from your instinct. I like to mix instinct and, empiric data, because it's so easy to make mistake and to follow your instinct, but you're off. So you have to, look at that, and then to make sure that you will keep the essential element, because people sometimes they do strategic planning and they have like 12 strategies. Mm-hmm. No. And push your team all the time to say, okay, if we have to grab only three, what are those three? Then you will always bring everybody to the end sense of the goal and of the issue to address.
I think this is so powerful. I actually want to kind of repeat it in order for people to draft that. That's a recipe in my mind, that once you've got your vision, you write that blueprint and it has to stand on one page.
Yes.
No more than one page.
I mean, the best is one page.
Yeah. And then you have to think of your audience as you're writing that blueprint. It has to be adapted to people that are more creative, that are more scientific, that are more emotional, that I have different frame of references so that I can see myself or feel myself in your story.
Totally. And then ultimately, you need to have buzzword, because, and I like to say that, but I realize it worked, because, and this was totally after the fact, because along my career, I had a lot of town halls with employees and large audiences. And I'm the type of person who like to put images to talk to people. So I would bring images and there would be a buzz sentence or a buzzword. And then 6 months later in the business, people would talk about that. So I said, oh my God, this is very strong. So then I used it as a tool. And then it became, part of my motto in the process of defining the vision, the plan, and so on. So the story, the engaging, engaging story is key, because people, they're not in the room with you when you see all those big graphs and all that thinking. They just will remember that blueprint, because on the day-to-day, their job is not to think about the future of the business, but they will know that, okay, that blueprint, that buzzword, that story, it relies to me today when I'm doing what I have to do.
And you're telling us what better way to actually ingrain that in people than images, because our brain still functions as kids. When we were looking at stories with images, it stays with us even more, obviously.
Totally.
And so you're saying create images, create stories that allow people to feel engaged, to connect with what you're saying.
But it has, of course, to rely on something, a strong base. It's not only, fly by night, and that's the end of the process when you package that. The repetition as well is so important, Chloe. You have to repeat and repeat and repeat. It's not once a year you say, okay, we're going to go there. No. You have to repeat. And when you think you're done, you repeat again. Because it's true. Repetition is the key.
And it's anchoring yourself. And in bigger organization, and even in small organization, it's like golf. I like to say it's like golf. Do you? I don't know if you agree with that. But once you hit the ball, it seems like you're going in the right direction, but just a tiny degree off at the end will bring you like, oh my God, yards of difference.
That's the best example, I think. That's the best example. And this is why you always have to get back to that. I would say to allow yourself to modify a little the course, because, if in the first year of execution, you realize that, it doesn't appear like your planning was envisioning, fine, you just readjust. But avoid throwing everything at the garbage, and because I've seen leader like that, and you're confusing everyone.
Uh-huh.
And
all adjustments along the way. Yeah.
Yes, and wanting to achieve too much at the same time. This is why you can have a 12 strategy plan, but work. Force yourself to prior, and I do it myself alone in my office, by the way, because I want to make sure that with my executive team, we're aligned. So when I get to the room, I've done my homework and we start talking, and I realize, okay, we're aligned, or we're aligned 2 out of 3, but the third one, it's there's 5 different. So we need to engage on that, people. So then we share and we fight and we argue. I would say not fight, but we argue, and then we come out to the third one and we're all in there all together. So
I love what you're saying. So how do you create that? So you mentioned creating a safe environment where people don't feel judged, where we all remove our hats, our individual hats. We come in the room with just a clear mindset of we're all in this together.
We're all leader of the company.
Of the same company.
Yes.
Working towards the same, in the same direction. What else allows for those conversations? I call it real conversations, where we really roll up our sleeves and talk real.
I don't know if you talked about courage so far, but courage is so important. The courage to express yourself, the courage to say things that you would prefer not saying, not freely, but you know, if you have a problem with an individual, and this happened to me, by the way, that was a roadblock to that team cohesiveness. There was conflict between 2 individuals, and they would talk to me alone in one-on-one. And then I said, the problem is not me. I'm not the one who's going to solve the issue between both of you. The only thing I can tell you is that both of you are very important to the success of the company. And I think that you can get along, because I know you, each of you individually, and you're stuck in a circle of there's something that has to be removed between both of you, but only both of you will be able to unfold that knot that you have, you know? So you force themselves to talk, and then even it's hard sometimes, but when they come back in the group dynamic, if you feel that some of their habits are still there, then you're going to put them on the spot. But you don't do that the day one, you know? You do that because you build the trust, and so it's used as an example to the others, and it's so strong that often I've been told by a subordinate of me that you're totally wrong, Manon. And it's not often that in front of the other exec, and of course, we're not perfect anyone. We all have egos. The more we're higher in the hierarchy, sometimes we have big egos and we take a lot of space. But knowing that those are the rules of play and it's done with respect, it's not done to judge the person.
Under you, yeah.
Yes. So everything comes in place, and it's all ingredients that support one another, and it makes a great soup.
I'm curious to hear you on the impact it has. So in terms of results, you mentioned one thing, noticing the words or the sentences or the images that would come back in the company. What else do you feel from a leadership standpoint? I'm not talking business, because business, it depends on your model, market share, dollars, whatever. But from a team perspective, what's your KPIs to know that things are going A1?
But of course, there's the financial KPIs and the performance metric. So this, you can have a great team spirit, but if the numbers are not met, you're missing the point. Mm-hmm. So knowing that all of that is there, by the way, you can be very successful with a shitty culture, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. It happens that you are in an environment that there's no competitors, and it's an easy game. But the more you're getting into a crowded market and, you know, the room for growth or for improving performance is hard to get, then culture will be your only element to bring that to the next level. That's my personal, it's not scientific, it's my personal take on that. So the element I say I would follow in terms of metrics for success in terms of team culture, there's 2 things, okay? Before answering that, I realized that I was able to create that type of culture with my direct report, but I wanted to influence the whole business. And this has been harder, because then there's layers and people will interpret, you know, what they hear differently. And so this was longer. But once we put in place coaching and all the formation for the business that went to the we say the how to do instead of what to do, mm-hmm. then it transformed the business. So people were taught how to communicate, how to handle one-on-one, so small things like that. To me, the only element that is that matters is the level of engagement. Yes. So we do questionnaires, we do a sondage, and then you ask people. And what I realized is we went through very difficult time because the market was very competitive. We had to let go of people in the company. We were in an optimization mode. So this means that when you optimize, some tasks will be digitalized. We were into a digital transformation. So once you digital something, there's people losing their jobs. So I thought that the engagement would go down. And I realized that because of the way we were doing it, the communication, that, you know, everything we've talked so far, the engagement gained about 20 points. Over 5 years. So I was like, oh my God, that's why now I can talk about it with so much confidence because I've tried it, I've done it, and it worked. So to me, I was even surprised.
Because gaining 20% in a challenging context is like gaining even more than 20%, obviously.
Yes. But there's something we didn't talk about because we were more at the top level executive, but then the notion of empowerment, it mm-hmm. makes the whole difference. When you empower people and then they have to empower the other, and it's a key metrics, key strategy you want to implement. That was kind of easy because I was in a culture where there were not a lot of empowerment. It was more a, we tell you what to do. Me, I wanted to change that. No. They can be better than us knowing what to do. They're on the floor doing it day to day. So we have to ask more than them to contribute to the solution. It transformed the way people were contributing. And so they felt empowered, they felt more engaged, and consequently, you know, the metrics of engagement improved.
And on empowerment, it's one thing to say, okay, go ahead and empower your team. It's something else to then sometimes put somewhat of a structure around empowerment. How did you go about creating more empowerment?
We had to transform the whole, how do you say, you know, the objectives and the way you monitor performance.
Yeah.
We had to change the whole thing because our engagement and our objectives and bonification program were very, very mathematic. Mm-hmm. So it was very key target. There was no how to know how and personal aspect of it. This was not taken into account. So we totally transformed that. Mm-hmm. So we removed the whole number, you're at 98 and blah, blah, blah. It was more like appreciation range, A, B, C, D. Actually, it was 1 to 5. It would allow people to have subjectivity to it. So this means that, so it was very hard because people were like, no, it needs to be objective. I need to be able to know it. But it's not that only. Mm. We're people interacting with other people. Even though you achieved your sales targets by the rooftop, but you were, you know, walking over everybody's head doing so, this is not acceptable in our company anymore. So we will value for the way you get to your target. And we still want those targets, by the way.
The how is equally important as the what, is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Yeah. We're towards the end of our time together. I can't believe it's time flies with you, Mana.
Wow,
I appreciate yes. it. There's 1 minute that I reserve at the end where I ask you 3 quick questions.
Okay.
And you don't have to expand. It's just quick answers for people
okay.
to notice that. So you alluded to that earlier, your superpower. My question here is, if you had to define your unique strategic contribution, what would it be?
Never lose sight of the big forest.
Mm. What is your one tip? Perhaps you already spoke about that, but one tip to empower your team. One.
Trust. To trust them. They'll be better than you at doing it.
What is one piece of advice to a leader that wants to raise their game?
not being scared of surrounding yourself with stronger people than you are in some areas, and definitely.
The last one, if you had to summarize leadership in three words, what would those three words be?
Well, it's going to be hard, this one. So it's going to be more than three words. It's being able to build yourself a great vision, so see the forest, but being able at the same time to see each tree and steps to go through in order to make that forest way nicer than it was before you came around.
Manon, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your generosity, your vulnerability, and your strength at the same time. I really, really appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Chloe.
Thanks for listening to this Empower Your Team podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it and can take away powerful tools and ideas. For more free content, events, and development tools, visit our website at empoweryourteam.com or on our LinkedIn or Facebook pages. And be sure to sign up for our newsletter to continue receiving Empower Your Team content and insights.